Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
Kaya Biz on Kaya 959 on the street, on the air. My name is Nzinga Kunta, standing in for Gugule Tumfupi, who's away for the week. Now, in February 2023, the Financial Action Task Force greylisted South Africa, and they said that the country wasn't complying with international standards when it came to preventing money laundering, financing of terrorist activities, and proliferation financing. Let's speak to Isaiah Mhlanga, the chief economist and head of research at Rand Merchant Bank. Isaiah, thanks so much for your time on Kaya Biz this evening. What's the latest with that story?
Look, we had an update that suggests that South Africa has satisfied all 22 items that were outstanding, and following that, they would have to be on or present evaluation on the ground physically, which means it's not just done on a desktop. So engagement with key stakeholders to make sure that all the issues that were outstanding are actually done. Once that is done, perhaps by October we could be removed from the grey listing. But by and large, all the outstanding issues have been satisfied, which means policymakers, decision makers in government and the private sector have done all the required, rectification of the things that were outstanding that should make South Africa to be out of the grey listing, that, that will help quite significantly in terms of reducing the cost of doing business in the country.
Yeah, Isaiah, can you give us insight into what kind of changes have been made to move away, to tick off those 22 items and try and get out of that grey list?
It's the legislative environment in terms of what sort of information financial institutions would have to collect and verify. Just a few would be the beneficiaries of trust, but also it would be the use and sources of funds that are transferred between individuals, among other things, to make sure that there is proper verification of who are the parties that are involved in financial transactions that will enable investigations to take place should there be any money laundering activities across, across the different financial institutions or financial role players. But it's also the law enforcement authorities in terms of the capability and the budgets to actually do the investigations. That has been a deficiency for some time. But you would have, you'd remember in the budget earlier in the year or even last year, there was some allocations to the law enforcement authorities to make sure that they have the capacity to do the investigations. All of those combined, they constituted to the remedial actions which were requested to make sure that South Africa is removed from the grey list.
Could that mean that we could see banks being stricter in terms of reporting, in terms of questioning what private citizens and clients are doing with their money?
Of course, I don't think it's necessarily a matter of being stricter. It's just requiring accurate capturing of information at the point of engaging with financial institutions to make sure that if there are investigations that need to be done, they have accurate information in terms of the actual location of individuals, the actual identities of individuals, some of whom can be behind trusts that is difficult to trace. So that ordinarily increases the cost of doing business, particularly for small and medium enterprises, in terms of just the documentation that is required, but also the length of time it takes to enter into transactions. So that would also lengthen, that time that businesses have to enter into transactions. So as a result, the general cost of doing business, particularly for cross-border transactions, that would have increased, which is negative for the economy overall.
I imagine that it must have taken a lot of coordinated efforts to try and move away, and quite quickly, if we think about February 2023 is not that far away, from being on a grey list. Can you tell us about this?
Indeed, it's quite complex. On average, other countries that have been grey-listed before, they have taken anywhere between 5 and 7 years to get off the grey list for those that managed to do so. Some of the countries, they haven't been able to get out of the grey list once they are in. One of the countries that was able to get off under 2 years is Mauritius, which we seem to be approaching, given that we're grey listed early 2023. So this suggests, or this is really an enormous achievement to having satisfied all the 22 items that were identified as deficiencies. To do that in under 2 years, it's something that you would not have expected given the historical context of other countries that have been grey-listed before. So kudos to the policymakers, the private sector that collaborated across the board to make sure that they address these deficiencies.
Yeah, there was a massive concern when this announcement of grey-listing came out and a panic. Why was it such a bad thing to be grey-listed? I mean, we still are. And practically, what did it mean?
Look, it's if you look at the groupings of countries that are grey-listed, these are countries that are known for being hubs of terrorist financing, massive corruption, which you don't want to be part of.
Correct.
But also, if you just look in terms of the impact that it has on an economy, it represents a lost opportunity. Looking to come into the country for the first time, for instance, and now they question whether they should be investing in the country or they should look at a different country which doesn't have the issues of grey listing. So it deters investment. But for existing businesses that are operating in the country, just means the cost of doing business to enter into new financial transactions is also just up.
Okay.
For the financial sector in particular, they have to employ more compliance officials that are going to check and verify the documentation and the source of financing, which again means it's an increased cost of doing business. So that cost of doing business that is now higher means they can't employ other employees in other areas of the business. That's lost opportunity in terms of employment creation elsewhere. So it's just the lost opportunity from new investments for companies that are not well aware about the country's dynamics, but also lost opportunity for employing new people in other areas of businesses, because you have to employ compliance officers, and the general increase of general increase in cost of doing business for many of the financial services sector.
I'm wondering, Isaiah, when this came out, I interviewed an economist who said, you know, this is hysteria over nothing. It's a perception thing. It's the same as when agencies rate us, and our credit rating goes down and people panic. At the end of the day, it is not that significant. What do you think of that assessment?
Look, I think that's an assessment that does not understand how the financial world works.
Sure.
I mean, if you take credit rating as an example that you used, essentially it's an assessment of the ability for anybody that borrows money to pay back that money with interest. It's not a perception. It's something that is based on real analysis of an institution's financials and its ability to service its debt. Similarly, with a grey listing, it's not just perception. You know, it is, based on real assessment of risks of money laundering, corruption activities. I mean, we just have to go into the Zondo Commission reports to get a sense of the corruption that we had in the state to get a validation of, some validity of why we were grey listed. And that is not a perception.
Yeah.
We can get some verification out of investigations that were done in the country.
Yeah, he's a very smart person, so I'm not going to argue for him because I don't know if I'm as learned in economics as the both of you. But he was saying, although there are financial aspects to it, he was saying the perception of ratings agencies is skewed and we shouldn't take it seriously. But that's a discussion for another day when both of you are maybe in the studio. Let's go back to the anti-money laundering legislation or changes to that. Is that going to happen, and what kind of changes can the public and financial sector expect?
Look, the legislation has already changed. It was in the budgets gone by that we announced by National Treasury, and on the back of that legislation, that is why we now have satisfied the 22 action items that Treasury issued a statement on. Following the meetings that were held by the global body that focuses on these things. So that legislation enabled the actions that were done to take place. So it has already changed, which is why many people that transact with banks or financial institutions would have received emails to verify their addresses and some of the information that was outstanding. It was on the back of that change in legislation.
Mm-hmm. And what about the impact of compliance costs for small businesses? Or is it, as you were saying, just sending an email, scanning a document, and there's not too much onus or placed on small businesses?
Well, any small business that are dealing with financial transactions don't have to comply with the requirements to document the source and the use of the funds.
Mm-hmm.
It does increase the cost of doing business for them because they don't have the capacity to employ a lot of compliance officials that are going to do that. Mm-hmm. So it's an added cost for small businesses, which impedes on their growth and their ability for them to create employment.
Mm. But I assume then that's outweighed by the benefits that come with being off the grey list and the costs that are down. I just want to go back to a point that you made earlier on, that this was a coordinated effort between the public and the private sector. Do we see a lot of examples of that? Often they are pitted against each other, or often you'll hear a CEO coming out and saying, I don't believe what government is saying on this, or we don't believe that as a private sector government is doing this correct. But there are instances like this where you are working together and it works.
There are many instances, perhaps not enough to the extent that is required, because both government and the private sector are required into making an economy thrive and create jobs and reduce unemployment rate and poverty. The government sector provides the regulatory framework within which the private sector operates. So they have to work together. It can be that we continue to see these two different parts of the economy being pitted against each other. We need government, we need the private sector, we need civil society for that matter, because ultimately businesses and government operate within civil society setting. Mm-hmm. And these are different role players that are required in running an economy. And you can just take an example in the energy space, the reforms that were done in the energy space, government changed legislation, and the private sector invested significant amount of money into renewable energy. We have reduced or eliminated load shedding. That is one of the collaborative efforts that we have seen. But there are many others that we can talk about with the benefit of time.
Mm-hmm. What happens come October? Those 22 items are dealt with. The legislation is there. South Africa is enforcing more compliance when it comes to businesses. What can we expect?
Look, hopefully there will be an official announcement from the FATF to actually say South Africa is officially off the grey listing. That's the hope that we have. Following that, then it means potentially the companies that are outside of the country that were looking to invest into the country will find it easier, because South Africa is no longer in the grey list. They'll find it easier to engage with South African counterparts in terms of investing in the domestic economy. And that once we start to see a couple of them, it should build confidence in the South African economy from foreign investors that South Africa is a good country to invest in, and the risks are not as high as what we indicated as, and therefore they must bring money into the country and invest. That should help in terms of economic growth and job creation.
Mm-hmm. What about the perception issue that we spoke about a little bit earlier on? I know the Financial Action Task Force is also going to come to South Africa. There's an on-site assessment that needs to take place as well as what's already been done. And you spoke about how businesses outside of the country look and see, okay, if they're off the grey list, then they are a safe place for my money to be at. How much more should be done to change perception out of what has come out of things like state capture, what has come out of South Africa being grey-listed, in order to say to people, we are a functioning country with one of really the strongest banking systems in the world. We are a small country, but we are mighty. We follow rules, even though there's been these other scandals.
Look, even in the absence of being grey-listed, a country must always advertise itself as a good investment destination for investors. Mm-hmm. And that is something that we continuously need to do in international markets to investors all the time. But in this case, given that we will be just outside of grey-listing, perhaps more efforts would need to be done to say these are the things that we have done in order to rectify the issues that we had. On a continuous basis to make sure that investors have a clear understanding of what is being done in the country, what happens at a local level, and their investments are safe, and they will be able to repay returns on their investments. This is something that should be a continuous process, not just in response to the lifting of grey listing alone, but mm-hmm. just as an ongoing way to advertise the country and showcase the opportunities that are in the country. You would remember a couple of investment conferences that were being held in the country to try and say, these are the opportunities, these are the sectors, and bring your investment to the country. They are all in safe hands. It's part and parcel of advertising the country for international investors to grow the economy.
And those collected around 1.1 trillion rand, if I'm correct. That was the aim of those investment conferences that took place since, I think, 2018. Isaiah Mhlanga, Chief Economist and Head of Research at Rand Merchant Bank, thank you so much for your time on Kaya Biz and really explaining that Financial Action Task Force, grey listing to us, what's been done, scenarios that could happen, and answering questions about challenges and perception. I really appreciate your time tonight.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.